Hi. I kind of feel like I'm a bit of an imposter in this room today, because I'm not really here to talk about, you know, like browser development, and I'm not necessarily here to talk about the platform from a standards perspective. But here I'm talking about web components from a JavaScript framework author's perspective, and that's maybe putting me at a bit of a disadvantage in this room. So yeah, hi, my name is Haley Thompson. You can find me on Blue Sky at haley.dev. I am on the core team for this really friendly programming language called Gleam. It compiles to JavaScript, it also compiles to Erlang. And I'm the author of a front-end framework in that language called Lustre. And like I said, I'm here to talk about web components. Often when we talk about web components as framework authors, that's maybe a bit negative. So here, I want to talk about ways that we can make components, web components work as a framework author. You know, often when we talk about web components and we're getting positive feedback, these are coming from people that maybe want to avoid frameworks or avoid writing lots of JavaScript or lock in. And on the flip side, it's framework authors that are often the most critical of the technology. And I think if we want to understand how we can make web components be a really like successful foundation to build a framework on, we first need to understand what those criticisms are and why they're being made. And I think a lot of that stems from this quote from the author of Solid.js. The fundamental problem with web components is that they're built on custom elements, and elements are not components. That's their observation. And then kind of a lot of consequences fall out from this. So framework components are not tied to the DOM in the same way that custom elements are, and that means they can often do more. If you think about, say, a React application, I mean, there's going to be hundreds, maybe thousands of components in an application, and maybe only a handful of them are actually rendering something to the DOM, and the rest of them are composing in different and interesting ways. Similarly, web components affect DOM structure. You know, they have to live in the DOM, and so that means if I have a web component that renders, say, a list item, and then I try and render that web component inside a list, well, I've broken the structure of the DOM. I've introduced, you know, semantic problems. And we can fix those. We can fix those with, you know, Araya attributes, for example. But from a framework's perspective, these are problems that never existed in the first place, and now we're having to think about ways to solve them. And then, of course, there's a performance conversation to be had here. When you're developing a framework, you really want to be tightly in control of as much of the runtime as possible. And when you go through web components, you're kind of forced into a very strict life cycle and a strict way of thinking about components that maybe doesn't map to how your framework wants to work, how your runtime wants to work. Now, none of these talking points are particularly new. I think maybe that Solid.js quote comes from, I don't know, the 2020. I think I've seen blog posts date back from 2015 talking about web components and the problems that they have as frameworks. So do we have any answers as a community? Well, kind of not really. As a community, we've kind of collectively agreed that web components are not framework components, and that's okay. Maybe frameworks don't even need to build on web components at all. And Leah Varu has this really excellent blog post kind of going into this idea. And she suggests that web components are at their best when they're these kind of generalizable elements. They extend what HTML can do, and they're used in the same way as kind of native HTML elements, meaning that they should be applicable to a wide range of diverse projects. Maybe another way to think about that is how many people, how many application authors do you expect to use that component? And if you care about reaching as many users as possible, then you might want to reach for web components. The big story there being, of course, interoperability. But the more project specific you get, then you know the scales start tipping towards framework components. And if you're already in, you know, a React or a Vue application, then the cost of, you know, pulling in or developing a web component is really outweighed by the convenience of just leaning onto the framework that you're already using. Now, I mean, I think that's a fine place to be, but that kind of original promise, the allure of using the platform, is still really, really strong for me. And fundamentally, these are both still components, right? I mean, we've seen or we've discussed maybe the elements and framework components, they're slightly different. But fundamentally, a component is about an encapsulation of, you know, state, behavior, render logic. And web components do that just as well as framework components. So framework authors often frame this conversation as a technical one. You know, custom elements, web components, they have technical requirements or technical limitations that don't work in the context of a framework. But we've also seen maybe the difference between web components and framework components is in terms of audience or in terms of reach. But I think there's actually a more fundamental difference between the two. And it comes down to their worldview. It comes down to how frameworks see the nature of applications versus web components or the platform in general. And I think that can be summed up as frameworks want to compose components. Right, the main building block in a React application is the React component. But elements are, web components are slightly different, and they want to be composing elements, right? They want to be composing real HTML elements, DOM nodes. And to kind of exemplify that, I've taken some snippets from the React homepage. I think using these is a really good example because, you know, that homepage has to sell you on the idea of the framework and convince you about what the framework's, you know, mental model and worldview is. And so we have a video component here. It's rendering some markup, and it's also rendering some other components that we don't know about right now. Next, they show us a video list. Here we're seeing that, you know, the templating language can do looping or whatever. And then maybe the most interesting part is when we introduce this searchable video list component. And now we're starting to talk about state management. So we have this string of state, search text. And interestingly, of course, this isn't rendering any DOM nodes directly. Now, if you're counting, that's six components just in this really small example. But if we think about what we said a component was, I mean, really, only one of these fits the bill, and that's that searchable video list. And so I think if we were working in the context of web components, we might not be thinking about, you know, that thumbnail or that like button as a web component. We might just be thinking about this as like a reusable piece of the DOM. Now, because framework components, they're this core compositional unit, from the ground up, frameworks have to work, not just have to, but they embrace this idea that, you know, you might have an application with many, many hundreds of stateful components, each with their own, you know, lifetimes and render loops. But do frameworks have to work this way? I mean, we can kind of see that there is this philosophical divide between how web components want to be used or see the world and how frameworks want to be used and see the world. But does it have to be like that? Well, when I think about Lustre, the framework that I develop, I like to think of it like this, in that the framework really wants to be composing elements, and it really doesn't want to be composing components at all. And to maybe exemplify, I ported those React snippets over to Lustre. So this is written in Gleam. I'm not going to go too deep into the language. I think if you understand a tiny bit of JavaScript, you can probably grok this. And so again, we have this video element. It's rendering some markup. It's calling some other functions. And again, the video list looks pretty similar to where things change or get a little bit more interesting is when we think about that searchable video list element. In React, we just introduced some state here. We wanted to handle the search input, what the user had typed, and so we just pull in, you know, use state, and now this is a stateful component. But if Lustre isn't about composing components, if it's about composing elements, then we have to do something if we want reactive state. And that's achieved in what maybe appears as a bit of a cop-out by simply moving that state somewhere else. Now, of course, you could do this in React too. But the difference is you don't actually have a choice in Lustre. There's no way to introduce component state in the same way. I was reading a blog post recently from an organization that had just ported their Vue application to Lustre. And I pulled out this quote because I actually just think it's really perfect for what I'm talking about here. And it's this idea that components that hold state in frameworks like React or Vue, etc., they make it super easy, in fact, super attractive, to model your state hierarchically in the same way that you model your Vue. But for Lustre, we kind of take this approach that state should be modeled separately from your Vue code. And actually, I think you see a convergence in framework communities of this idea too. I mean, first we had like Redux, now we have all sorts of store libraries trying to move state away from our components. In Lustre, that is achieved through an application architecture that all applications have to follow, and it's called the Model View Update Architecture. It's also known as the Elm architecture. And that means all applications kind of follow this blueprint. We start off with a model of our entire application state. So here we have that search query string. We also have the video metadata that we've loaded. And we have an init function to produce, you know, the first version of that state when the application starts. Then we have a message type that describes all the events that we want to react to. So maybe that's user interaction, or maybe that's, you know, HTTP requests, etc. And an update function that takes, you know, an incoming event and the current state of the application and returns a new one. So here, every time the user types something, we'll get a user updated search message with the new value that they've typed, and we store that in the model. And the final piece of that puzzle then is a view function, which takes the current application state at any given point in time and renders that as HTML elements. And then we package these things up together in an application, and we start it. You know, this is pretty standard affair for a framework, so we're mounting onto some element with an ID called app, and away we go. If we start talking about state management in frameworks, though, especially declarative frameworks, which most, you know, front-end frameworks are these days, then there's actually a dirty secret that we have to confront. And that's that frameworks like to pretend that they own all of the state. So, you know, we had that search input. We own, you know, the text the user has typed. Every time they type, we get a message, we update our state. We resync the DOM with whatever that string is. But of course, DOM nodes are stateful objects themselves, and there's a whole bunch of state that often exists in the DOM that is not modeled in our framework state. Now, most frameworks, most, I feel like developers in general, are quite happy to live with this convenient lie, and often it doesn't really get addressed or even spoken about. But if you kind of accept that this is what's going on, then you kind of open to the idea that web components let us play along with that lie, right? If we're already kind of okay with the idea that some DOM nodes have internal state that we're not going to manage from our framework, then web components are a way to tap into that potential, perhaps. So I want to revisit that idea of what web components are perhaps applicable for. And instead of talking about it in terms of audience, you know, how many users do I want my web, my component to be, you know, accessible to, I actually think the split is a bit more specific than that. And it's about presentation logic or view state versus business logic. You know, if you have a lot of presentation logic in a component and not much business logic, then that's this idea that the component isn't really tied to your application. You know, this might be more generalized in kind of Lear's framework. And as you introduce more and more business logic, then this is where we typically would feel like a framework component would come into its own. Now, once you're ready to kind of participate in this idea that web components let us, you know, play along with the lie whilst also getting some benefits out of state encapsulation, then Lustre makes that really easy. Instead of starting the application as like a single page app, mounting it onto a DOM node, we can just swap out what we do with that app. And so instead of starting it, we register it as a custom element. And I think this is one of the key parts about what makes components successful in Lustre, is that we kind of introduce the platform incrementally. I like to build on the idea that the platform is actually good, right? We don't really need to abstract too much away from it. But often there's a lot of upfront learning that has to be done, especially when it comes to web components. You know, you have to suddenly learn three specs. You have to learn how to deal with accessibility. You have to learn about what the shadow DOM is, how styling works, how slots work, et cetera, et cetera. And so making it really easy to just take an application and turn it into a web component, that's kind of this first step towards having a really tight integration. And of course, Lustre isn't the first framework to have done this. Svelte and Vue have done this in the past. But I really like this idea that the components, they build on your knowledge rather than replacing it. And so you can get comfortable with Lustre's approach to application architecture, which you kind of have to do if you want to buy into this kind of framework. And then once you're really comfortable with that, you can slowly start playing with components. First, by just taking your application and turning it into a custom element. But then, for example, changing the application constructor. So before we were calling lustre.application. Now we're calling lustre.component. And that gives us access to some new options. So for example, we can start listening for attribute changes. Maybe we learn about form association, and we want our components to participate in native HTML forms. You know, maybe we learn about focus delegation, particularly if we want to start distributing this component in contexts that we don't own. And then finally, especially if we're going to start talking about distributing this component outside of a Lustre application, there's this option here called adopt styles, and we can turn that off. Now the others The other options, these were part of the spec, right? If you know about web components, you've probably heard about listening for attribute changes or form association. But this idea of adopting styles, well, this is new. And this is one of the big warts that Lustre kind of has to contend with if it wants to present components as a viable option for application authors. And that's fundamentally that styling still remains really tricky when you're working with web components, especially when you're working with the Shadow DOM, which is what all Lustre components work with. And so what we do there is we have this kind of awful hack to crawl the document, find all of the style tags, all of the link tags, and they kind of get cloned into the component. And so if you're an application developer, 90% of the time, this just works. But 10% of the time is really awful. And I'm hoping that maybe if we can start thinking about web components as viable targets for applications, that maybe we can start having a conversation about splitting, you know, the Shadow DOM from style isolation. So to summarize, we kind of agree that elements are not components. But maybe frameworks don't need components as much as they think. And when they do want components, maybe web components are ready and waiting. Thank you for listening.
Q&A?